This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, it's Mark Teixeira. The Michael K. Show starts now. Here's Michael, Don, and Peter on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Mark. Haven't heard from him in a while. And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's May 24th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 3.5 hours. The other 20 and a half, your responsibility. At 6:30, Ranger pregame show. Big game 4 at Madison Square Garden tonight, where the Rangers could even this series up at 2 apiece. Or the Hurricanes could really take a stranglehold on the best of 7 by taking a 3-1 advantage and going back to Carolina, where they have yet to lose in the postseason. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody's feeling great. Don, Peter, how's life?
Life's good.
Oh, fantastic.
Really?
It was such an apparent afternoon today. You know, the kids are in daycare, so what do? We cleaned out the DVR, and we went through all the shoes that are old that we got to get rid of for them, which ones go to charity and which ones they get to keep. Because right now, like, our kitchen is basically a mountain of shoes. So that was our afternoon today.
Wow, beautiful. What a day.
Yeah, it was a productive day. We checked some things off the list.
All right, let's start off today with today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. And I don't think... we should stop the wheel, because I don't know if you could play, rest roulette, because there are so many people that are unavailable because of COVID. So let's just give you the starting lineup the Yankees are sending out. Third baseman is DJ LeMahieu leading off. Right field, Aaron Judge. Anthony Rizzo at first. Stanton, the DH. Torres will bat fifth and play second. Sixth is the center fielder, Hicks. And Duhar in left field batting seventh. Batting eighth, the shortstop, Kanafalefa. And the catcher is Trevino. And he will bat ninth. Jordan Montgomery is the starter. So that's today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea, a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show. The official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. All right, so here's the deal. Yankees lost again yesterday. They end up losing 6-4. And they lose 3 in a row for the first time all year. So they were one of 4 teams that had yet to lose 3 in a row. Those other 3 remain: the Padres, the Braves, and the Mets. Mets with a big win against the Giants. And, Don just told us that after Max Scherzer has walked off the mound with the injury, Mets are 6-1. So nothing seems like it affects them, and they continue to roll on. They've built on their lead in the National League East, so much respect must go their way. Now, you look what the Yankees did yesterday, and their offense essentially at this point is Aaron Judge. So Aaron Judge is on pace to hit 66 home runs this season. He has 17 home runs. That leads the major leagues. If you looked at the lineup that we gave you yesterday and the lineup the Yankees ran out, it's kind of hard to win games when Gleyber Torres is your cleanup hitter, Kanafalefa is your number 5 hitter. Those guys are not those sort of hitters, and Marwin Gonzalez is down there as well. It's just not a great offensive lineup. And you could see that Stanton might be slipping into one of his down times. He's 0 for his last 11. Rizzo has had 1 home run in the month of May. All of his numbers, his production numbers, his power numbers came in April. So he has 10 home runs and I think 25 runs batted, and most of them came in April. So he hasn't been a force either. So the Yankee lineup has stalled. Now they were owed 2 home runs by Judge yesterday to 4 runs. A solo home run and a 2-run home run, and the other run was an unearned run because of an Oriole error. And it's ridiculous to panic. We told you about these things happen during a season. We told you about the fact that, the wins that you get now, you could bank them, and they serve as a cushion for these times. Well, I will tell you, they're in those times right now. With the COVID ILs of Gallo and Donaldson and Higashioka, your lineup is completely different. That's number one. Number two, if you take a look at the bullpen, that's the one, guys, that's the one that gives me a little long-term concern. Chad Green's out. Now, you can say, well, Chad Green wasn't one of their high-leverage guys. Chad Green was important. Chad Green can pick up and out in the sixth, get you 3 outs in the seventh before you had to get your high-leverage guys. So Chad Green is out for the year. And if you look at the bullpen right now, there are two guys that you could really depend on. Two. Clay Holmes, who has 21 straight scoreless innings, and Michael King, who didn't have a great outing his last time out, but he's been money for most of the season. Chapman, they're dealing with tendonitis in his Achilles. He, right now, you know, has given up runs in five straight games. He's never done that in his career. Jonathan Loaisiga is nothing like he was last year. Still throwing as hard, but I've learned over the years that don't look at velocity, because velocity can be made up. You could put a little extra into it, but the location's not there. His breaking ball is up in the zone. I'm a little concerned that Loaisiga is not the pitcher that he was last year. So now you're leaning on guys like Ron Marinaccio, who I think is going to be good, but he's still, you know, a newbie. Clark Schmidt, who they haven't used that much. Wandy Peralta, who gave up a run in yesterday's game that made it go from 5-4 to 6-4. So the bullpen, which was an absolute strength when the Yankees were building up the best record in baseball, is now a little bit of a question mark. So that would worry me a little bit. Now, I think that they have enough talent in their farm system that Brian Cashman can pick up relievers. But losing Green hurts. Losing what Chapman should be hurts. And seeing Loaisiga not the pitcher that he was last year at this point, that hurts as well. Panic time? Absolutely not. But I am laying it out there for everybody that there are some legitimate things that you can, you know, worry about. I wouldn't say panic, but you can worry about it because their starting rotation's been great and their bullpen's been great. But right now their bullpen is a little bit questionable in terms of depth. They can fill the end of the game because Holmes has been that great. But giving you three or four innings of shutout ball, I don't know if that exists right now the way the bullpen is constituted.
But, Michael, even with the issues they have, shouldn't they have enough to beat Baltimore? I mean, Baltimore is barely fielding a professional baseball team.
Well, I hear what you're saying, except for that fact that Baltimore just took two out of three from Tampa Bay. So Baltimore's bullpen is very good. It has the fifth best ERA in all of baseball. I'm not making Baltimore out to be a good team. I agree with you. They should beat them. And they have two more games to do it. And one other thing, and I know Yankee fans are going to want to talk about it, so let's get right into it. You know, Gerrit Cole is your ace. And Gerrit Cole is supposed to stop losing streaks. So they had lost a doubleheader on Sunday. And you figure Gerrit Cole against the Orioles is, well, that's automatic win day. And he had a very odd game. Because I thought he pitched great. I thought he had unbelievable stuff. But he had that one bad inning where I couldn't believe I saw what was happening. The Orioles scored four runs. And, you know, the rest of the game, he has 11 strikeouts and no walks and gave them eight innings. He was an absolute stud. But that one inning, and then he gave up the home run to Arias that broke a 4-4 tie and kind of broke the Yankees back. Because right now, late inning heroics, it's going to be tough unless Aaron Judge comes up. That's how good Aaron Judge has been. But the rest of the lineup right now is really staggered. You can't lose the bats that they've lost and expect to make hay. You know, Florial has proven himself at the AAA level. He's never really hit up here. So he had two games in a row where he played, didn't do anything. He did get a walk in the ninth inning. Marwin Gonzalez, the more you play him, you're going to realize he's a guy that you could fill in all over the place. But if he plays every day, that's a different story. Now, Joey Gallo's batting average is not good, but at least he's a threat every time to go yard. And we know what Donaldson can do. Donaldson was putting together a really good season. So it brings us to Judge. And Judge, I think, has shown himself to be an absolute stud in many, many ways. First of all, he put the pressure on himself, bet on himself, and boy, that bet looks like he's going to hit lotto. Again, he's on pace to hit 66 home runs. Will he do it? I have no idea. It's hard to say on pace, but that's exactly what it is. After this many games, he has 17 home runs. So after 162 games, he should have 66 if he keeps up this pace. But people do fall into slumps. But, Peter, I know that he impressed you with the words that he had after the game yesterday, more so than anything he's done on the field.
Yeah, I saw his little moment by the locker yesterday speaking to reporters about the Donaldson situation. And frankly, I'm curious how Yankees fans feel. Regardless of how you individually may think of the Donaldson incident, punishment, et cetera, I feel like if you're a Yankee fan, you have to be happy with the way Judge conducted himself. It's a tough spot. It's one of the first times he's been in a situation like this where he is the clear team leader who had to speak out on a cultural issue. He did not bury his teammate, Josh Donaldson, but he did sort of make his disappointment felt. I thought it was a very strong statement and a great moment for a guy who a lot of people think could be the next captain of the Yankees.
Well, here is what he said. This is what Peter's talking about. He addressed the Donaldson situation, and he did something that most professional athletes don't do. He didn't blindly defend his teammate. Here's Judge.
You know, it's a tough one. You know, joke or not, you know, I just don't think it's, you know, the right thing to do there, especially, you know, given the history, you know, especially the series in Chicago, you know, kind of a little bit of beef between Anderson and JD, and, you know, Anderson's, you know, one of the best shortstops in the game, and, you know, he's a big part of MLB and, you know, what's going on here and how we can grow the game, and, you know, JD for that one game suspension, I don't know, I just don't think it, you know, on JD's, you know, he made a mistake, you know, owned up to it, and, you know, now we got to move on.
That's a real difficult tightrope to walk. And I think he showed great leadership skills there, because I've told you guys this before. You know, if somebody on a team took an axe and split my head open and another guy on the team saw it, the guy with the axe would be defended by the guy on the team. That's just the way it is. I mean, it's a closed culture, and they're in it together, and they're together for all these months, and they're with the teammates before they more so than they are with their family. But he did not blindly, and neither did Boone. I thought Boone, I said Boone was pitch perfect, but Boone's the manager. You know, he's also representing the organization. Judge is representing his team. And you're right, Peter, that had captain vibes to it, where he said the right thing. He didn't throw his teammate under the bus, but he didn't exonerate him either.
Yep.
And I think that's important. And I don't think that Donaldson should be thrown under the bus, nor do I think he should be exonerated. And I think that we straddled that line for a lot of yesterday's show. You can't call him a racist because you don't know. And I don't think the words that he said to Anderson would be rock solid. Yeah, he's a racist. I mean, if he's a racist, well, then you would understand why he would go there. But even if he's not a racist, you would understand he's mocking Anderson for having the audacity to actually compare himself to Jackie Robinson. And, you know, Judge being an African-American player on this team, he wasn't going to just completely wipe it away and said no big deal. He brought Donaldson to task without embarrassing him. And that's a tough thing to do, but I think he did it and did the right thing. And I think by saying something like that, he gains more respect around the league. I think he's very respected by other players, but he didn't blindly just defend Josh Donaldson. He just said, hey, he shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have done it with the history between them. He shouldn't have done it. I thought Judge handled himself very well. And then what he does on the field, well, there's nothing else to say about that. He's been magnificent.
Yeah, I thought it was a good night for Judge. Really, really tough, awkward thing to do. And he did, listen, it's not like he came out and gave some hard statement. You made a good point comparing it to sort of our show. He did something that people don't do well, and that is sort of have a nuanced opinion. He gave, right. He talked calmly and just explained how he felt. And I just thought, again, regardless how you feel, it's a night where you feel good about Judge being your leader.
And I know there's some people that are getting on MLB that it was weak to suspend Donaldson, that it wasn't a racist comment. You know, first of all, it's kind of uncomfortable as a white guy to say what's racist and what's not. Now, I have an opinion, and I'm entitled to have my opinion, but it kind of comes across as not right to be insensitive, to just discard it and say that there was no racial overtones. And what we've seen in this society, and I think it's a good thing overall, although it does irritate the establishment, is to acknowledge the sensitivity. Right, whatever it is, whether it's race, whether it's religion, whether it's politics, whether it's you know, sexual orientation, whatever, it's just that we lived in a society for a long time where we kind of leaned away from the sensitive part. All right, you know, man up, you know, come on, get over it. It's baseball, all right? It's just words, sticks and stones, right? But now we don't live in that society anymore. We have to acknowledge the sensitivity. And I think that's what baseball did. I think that's what Judge did. Is just, all right, listen, it may not be racist. We'll never really know, get inside Donaldson's head. But just to acknowledge the sensitivity. It's something that clearly irritated Anderson. He has a right to be irritated by it. The voice is displeasure for it. Do I think Tony La Russa went overboard? Absolutely. Do I think some of his teammates went overboard? Absolutely. But did Major League Baseball, for acknowledging the sensitivity and issuing a one-game suspension? I think we kind of live in a world where you've got to kind of acknowledge it. And then we kind of parse it out after the fact, and there'll be an investigation, and they'll find out or try to find out exactly what happened. But I think we've learned a lot over the last few years that we need to be sensitive to the person complaining a little bit more than we were in the past.
See, that's where Don and I split just a little bit. I didn't see the reason or the necessity to suspend him, and he's still going to appeal it, so we'll see if anything is done with it. I doubt anything will be done because you're essentially appealing it to the people that handed down the punishment. But just because to say that he caused a bench-clearing incident, he didn't. I thought that Yasmani Grandal did. And to because he was antagonistic, I mean, that's what sports is. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? What was Domi at the end of game three? He was being antagonistic. That's you're trying to get into the mind of the player. Yeah. So if Donaldson could actually upset a guy like Anderson and maybe throw him off his game, then most teams would say job well done. And I know that the use of the word Jackie is probably what brings this into a realm of being questioned. But if he called him, I don't know, another name, hey, jerk, would he be suspended?
No, but that's the thing, is that's why baseball's got to lean towards the sensitive part. There's a difference between jerk and Jackie. Like, no, there's no overtones. There's no offense when you call somebody a jerk. But when Jackie, now it kind of opens up, they're going to investigate this. You know, it's a sport that basically suspends you even if you don't go to jail for allegations, right? Football, you know, Deshaun Watson is going to get suspended and not do any time. You know, because we now live in a world where we're, yeah, did he incite the brawl, like, literally in the sense of, was he Grandal? No, but not that there was a brawl, but the bench-clearing incident, really the foundation of it was the words that Donaldson used. And Jackie's not jerk. You know, so I think that that's all baseball's leaning towards, is isn't it better, Michael, to lean towards that than baseball coming across insensitive, ignoring what might have been something that was very inappropriate, something that Donaldson did apologize for. Aaron Judge is talking about it was the wrong thing to do. So after the dust settles, does the one-game suspension look nearly as bad as it did, you know, when it first happened?
No.
So just lean on the side of, hey, don't think that this word is exactly appropriate, so we're giving you a game. At the end of the day, doesn't that make baseball look better than just ignoring it?
Yeah, I think it's the play also, Don. And I said it yesterday. I think that baseball easily, and this is the only issue I have with their statement. Their statement was okay, but it sort of leaned a little bit on the fact that it incited a fight as opposed to the nature of what was said. It's like they didn't want to say whether or not they found it to be racially insensitive, which is why I think they should have just outlined specifically it being about Jackie Robinson, a player who is treated differently and on a higher level, guys, than I think any other player in Major League history. I think it would be fair for Major League Baseball to say they take Jackie Robinson's name seriously, and for that he's being suspended. I think that would have kind of covered all angles. Now, I'm sorry, Michael, go ahead.
I don't know if I've ever agreed with you more.
Or just,
I mean, that was pitch perfect. That it incited an altercation. So, like, when somebody says your mother smells, that's going to incite an altercation. Are you going to suspend the guy?
Right.
Now you've set this baseline where there are going to be a lot of suspensions. Oh. If they had articulated, it's because he used the name of Jackie Robinson, who is a very important person to our sport and our country. We think that this is the proper way. But to say that he incited an altercation, it's just the wrong wording, because now you've got to suspend everyone who incites an altercation. Hey, I saw your wife nude last night. Boom, fight. You going to suspend him?
And very specifically, Don, now remember, after this all happened, you then have fans mocking by chanting Jackie. And Sean King just tweeted earlier, I spoke to two Yankees players this morning who said they were, quote, humiliated when thousands of their own fans chanted Jackie every time Tim Anderson came to bat. So it also led to that, which no matter how you felt about what Donaldson did it, now you have thousands of fans using Jackie's name in a way that's not cool.
It's because here's where it, Michael, like if he called him a jerk and he got mad and it incited the bench clearing incident, Major League Baseball look at it. Come on, Tim, really? Buck up, camper. He called you a jerk. Shut up. But when it's Jackie, would that really want to be the tact you want to take? Oh, come on, Tim, give me a break. You know, because it's kind of, listen, everything's insensitive in some way, shape, or form, but this seems to just carry a little bit more weight than your average jerk or even your mom or the fact that you're bald or that you might be overweight. Everything is insensitive in some way, shape, or form, but could you make a serious case that this crossed the line? Yes, you can. Now, what line that is it a racial line, insensitive, whatever, but this just seemed to hit different. Because I don't think anybody that said, hey, you jerk, is going to feel like he has to apologize after the game.
Yeah, but he did. I mean, he assiduously said, I'm apologizing if that offended
right.
him. He didn't apologize because he thought it was a racist comment. I mean, I don't think an apology gets you out from under if it's a racist comment. But if he said, I don't like that apology, but maybe it was worded specifically, if he was offended by me joking, well, I'm sorry that happened. So, another sainted name in baseball is Willie Mays. He's one of the oldest living players. So if he had compared himself to Willie Mays and then Don said, hey, Willie, how you doing? Would this have happened? I know Jackie Robinson brings the racial angle into it, but Willie Mays is still a sainted player. You don't mess with Willie Mays' name.
Well, the question is, Michael, we can all have our opinion whether we believe that this was racially motivated. Okay? But it's a conversation. But if he called him Willie, would it be a conversation?
Probably not.
All right? If he called him a jerk, would it be a conversation? If he called him loudmouth or what you know, so the point is that when I hate to use the word victim, but I guess just for lack of a better phrase, the victim here, Tim Anderson, he feels like there's enough people that feel like he's got a right to complain. So that's all anything is, Michael. At the end of the day, it's all right, let's hear your side, and then you hear it and go, okay, I can kind of get it, or you don't get it. And there's certain words and certain things he could have called him where, you know what, you're not gonna take Tim's side. You're not going to get it. You're not going to understand it. And there's not going to be any apologies, and I'm sorry I offended yous, or suspensions, or the future captain of the team feeling like he had to talk about it. But this word apparently crossed the line, and maybe we didn't know it now, but we know it. We didn't know it then, but we know it now.
Before we take a break, because we want to take a lot of your phone calls on the Yankees, you know, three-game struggles that they've had and whether they could be, you know, a problem moving forward, at least for a little bit. And remember, this weekend they go into St. Pete to play the Rays four games. Let me give you the Orioles starting lineup brought to you by Nissan. Mullins in center, Mancini the DH, Santander in right, Hayes in left cleaning up. Mountcastle at first will bat fifth, batting sixth, Rutschman behind the plate. Urias, the third baseman, bat seventh. Odor will play second and bat eighth, and batting ninth and playing shortstop is Jorge Mateo. So that's today's Orioles starting lineup as Bruce Zimmerman will pitch for the Orioles. He's pretty good. Brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com. The paperback of Center Stage, the book.
Oh.
It's out today. Great to carry around at the beach during the summer, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I just carry it around like, you know, a very important book. It's much easier than the hardcover. So I might give some away today.
I would like to keep it around me like a Bible.
I don't know if it lives up to that, but, you know, if you feel that way, why not?
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a brief time out, 1-800-919-3776. Let's talk to you. We'll talk Rangers a little bit later on as well. And we're not going to forget the Mets, who had an impressive outing against the Giants, and also a player on the Mets that should be mentioned in the same breath as Aaron Judge. Coming up on the K-Show right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Gerrit Cole is your ace, and Gerrit Cole is supposed to stop losing streak. And you figure Gerrit Cole against the Orioles, that's automatic win day. And he had a very odd game. I thought he pitched great. I thought he had unbelievable stuff. But he had that one bad inning where I couldn't believe I saw what was happening. The Orioles scored four runs. And, you know, the rest of the game, he has 11 strikeouts and no walks and gave them eight innings. He was an absolute stud. But that one inning, and then he gave up the home run to Urias that broke a 4-4 tie and kind of broke the Yankees back. Because right now, late inning heroics, it's going to be tough unless Aaron Judge comes up. That's how good Aaron Judge has been, but the rest of the lineup right now is really staggered. You can't lose the bats that they've lost and expect to make hay.
The Michael K. Show.
I do worry a little bit about where the bullpen is headed.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Ah, yes. Yankees have lost three in a row for the first time all season. Now there are three teams remaining that have not suffered that indignity. The Padres, one of them. The Braves, another. and then the New York baseball Mets. It's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. Mets play the Giants tonight at 9:45. Yankees against the Orioles at 7:05 at the stadium. And then the Rangers and the Hurricanes. Puck drop at 7 at Madison Square Garden. And you can hear it right here on 98.7 ESPN. The pregame's at 6:30. Game Time is at 7. That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. So that leads us to Diamond Notes, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Let's not sleep on Mr. Peter Alonso. You can make the case that he's having as good a year as Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge gets all the press, all the notice, all the talk. But very quietly, Pete Alonso has put up a monster amount of RBIs. He's hitting, I think, in the 280s. He has his share of home runs, and he has been a rock in the middle of that Met lineup. Let's not forget that if we were voting for the MVP in the National League, you'd have to give serious consideration for Pete Alonso. That's how good he has been. He has been a rock for the Mets. So since Max Scherzer called out the training staff and Buck Showalter in that game and said that he couldn't go anymore, the Mets are 6-1. And one of the reasons that they're 6-1, yeah, the people that have filled in pitching-wise have done a nice job, but their offense is very stout. They have the second-best plus run differential in the National League to the Dodgers. Don, this team is really good, really close. They had fun with Buck Showalter yesterday on his 66th birthday. I think they like each other, and that's a key to a team doing well.
Well, they're coming together, and last night was a really good example. This Giants team is kind of scuffling a little bit. Their entire outfield and their first baseman, Brandon Belt, hurt. So you're catching the Giants at the right time. And, you know, they took 2 out of 3 from Colorado. Now you start the series against San Francisco, and Crawford, it's a two-run home run off of Peterson, so you're pretty much down 2-0 right away. And then they get a huge break. Ruff doesn't feel – just didn't really get track a pop-up well, lands in fair territory, ground rule double, you know, two-run score, then Alonso hits the three-run home run. They just pounced on the opportunity. Like, there it was. We got a chance for the kill shot immediately, and the guy to get it for him is the guy that's batting .288 with 11 home runs and 40 RBIs, and that's Pete Alonso. He's having a phenomenal season. So, you know, it's about just rolling on, and I said it yesterday, keep swimming, all right? So, all right. Scherzer goes down that game against the Cardinals. They win that game. They win the next day of that afternoon. Take 2 out of 3 from Colorado. Now they take the first game against San Francisco, win that series, and just kind of keep moving on. And the lead's grown. Right? So that's why you got to feel good about this team, Michael. It doesn't seem like anything really overly affects them. And you talk about injuries, and you know the Yankees lineup, you know, it suffered the injuries that it suffered. But you know, you've lost 3 starting pitchers to start the year. And they just keep rolling along. Lindor, struggling. Escobar, struggling. They, you know, still going out there and winning games. You know, so it hasn't all been perfect. Canna missed some time. You know, McCann's been out. You know, so it's not like they haven't faced adversity. It hasn't been all cruise control. They've had to navigate through some things here. And, again, it's early. And, yes, they've got the lead they have because Philadelphia and Atlanta got off to slow starts. But take a look at Michael. They've got as many wins as the Dodgers have. Got as many wins as the Yankees have. Now, they played a couple of more games, so they don't have the best record in baseball, but it's right there. They've done some phenomenal things here, and that's why I wasn't, you know, I was concerned but not panicky after Scherzer went down.
And look at the lead. I don't care how they got it. Look at the lead they have in the East. Again, that gives you cushion for what should be a very daunting task in June. They play really good teams, but Met fans shouldn't look at it while we're playing really good teams. Those teams are saying, we're playing the Mets. The Mets are a really good team. And to lose DeGrom at the beginning of the year, and then the guy that they got in case they didn't have DeGrom, Max Scherzer, and really, not blink. Met fans, I know, are always waiting for the other shoe to drop. I don't know if it's going to drop this year.
It doesn't feel like it right now.
No, see, it's all about feel. And remember, they were off to a good start last year. They're in first place last year. But you never had a feeling like this was sustainable. You hope they might be able to work on a wild card, hang in there. If you're watching this team, you just get that feel like they're a really good baseball team. Now, are they the best team in baseball? What does it matter? It's about being the best team in your division. And right now, they're 29-15, plus 52 run differential. There's just a feel to it. And again, Peter, it hasn't been all, you know, beautiful here. They've had injuries. They've faced adversity. You know, so, oh, wait till there's an injury. The other shoe has been dropping. Shoes have dropped, right? The Grom shoe, the Scherzer shoe, and yet they just continue to go out there and win series and be, you know, right now one of, if not the best teams in Major League Baseball. So, really, if you're still not feeling this, then you've got nerve-ending problems. You can't feel.
Now, it's important when a team really likes its manager. And, you know, when they hired Showalter, who obviously I advocated for because he's a brilliant baseball mind, you wondered how a 65-year-old guy set in his ways was going to interact with a young group of guys. And yesterday was Buck's 66th birthday, and they blindfolded him. And Eduardo Escobar, who was kind of like emerged as the de facto captain of the team, he blindfolds Buck, and Buck allows himself to be blindfolded. The trust factor there, and they walk him into the indoor batting cage, and they have him take hacks at a pinata, and that's a great bonding moment for the team. So, you know, the Buck Showalter that I first got to know when he got the Yankee job at 35, I don't know if he had as much fun then. You know, he's trying to prove that he belonged. This, I think, he looks at this as the last chance saloon, and he's going to get it right. I think this team really likes him. And I think he really likes them. I think he's having a blast. And for them to do what they did with him, sometimes managers' birthdays come and go, and players aren't going to go out of their way to make something special like that. For Escobar to, like, put together a pinata that Buck could, you know, swing at and break, and then whatever was in it drops out. I like that. I think there's togetherness there, which means that they will go to the wall for this guy, and he will go to the wall for them.
This is what the analytic guys don't get with their managers. They just want a messenger, a puppet. Peter, I think ball players, athletes in general, I think they want to be coached. But they have to want to respect the guy, feel that there's some credentials there, and want to be led by this person. And so when you just bring in a no-name, like you said, why would they act that way with Rojas? No offense to Rojas. It'd be like, oh, who is he? You know, prove to me that you can lead us. Buck doesn't have to do that. Buck walks in the room, and he's got the credentials as a leader. Plus, he's had their back during all these guys getting hit. You know, so they obviously noticed that. So if you believe the theory that athletes want to be coached, if you get the right person, they'll follow them. Because I think they want to be led. And this seems like a team that really trusts Buck and wants to be led by Buck.
There was a story in The Athletic yesterday about the Golden State Warriors and how Steve Kerr coaches them. And what he does is it's almost like a group effort. Any major decision with a lineup change or a scheme change, he calls in Curry, Draymond Green, and Iguodala. And if they don't sign off on it and they don't think it's a good idea, he won't do it. And if they come up with something and they come to him and he thinks, you know what, he'll implement it. And I think that's what the modern leader has to do. You have to include – and I think that one of the smartest things that Buck did when he got the job, he immediately bonded with Lindor. Lindor's going to be there 10 years.
Yep.
Lindor's the star of the team. He makes the most money other than Scherzer. And Buck has kind of made him part of the leadership committee – which turned things around for Tom Coughlin, too, where he and Lindor have a constant running conversation. What do we do here? What do you think about this? And Buck lets Lindor, like, initiate these talks. And I can't tell you how important that is.
It's
so smart by him.
Notice, you know, I said they want to be led. They don't necessarily want to be ruled.
Right.
You know, and I think there was a time in sports, you think of the Vince Lombardis of the world, that like it was like a dictatorship. It was his way or the highway. That doesn't work anymore. But there has to be leaders, guys that you follow, and you can make them part of the conversation, but if there is a tie, all right, tie goes to the manager. You know, I would think that if there is any kind of tie, that Kerr will have the eventual final say. Somebody's got to be the big boy in the room. That's why I say adults in the room. Get that. And, so, and no offense to the neophyte managers that they've had in the past, Michael, but that's a, you know, you just can't walk in there and it's your first job or you had never had any success anywhere else and expect to just automatically be the leader because you're the manager. You know, you've got to work at it. And sometimes it takes a lot of time, but you go back to the Jerry Manuels and you go back to Rojas and Callaway. These are guys that didn't have a ton of experience, almost zero experience as manager. And then you just hope that you can eventually get the players to follow you. Buck had it easier because even though he never won, Michael, he's had success enough and has been around long enough to know how to do it so the players trust him. And I'm sure there are a lot of guys in the room that really like the fact that they've got a manager that knows how to do it. It's been around a while and gets it.
And there's an important distinction. Like, you could bring in a 42-year-old former player to manage who isn't much of an authoritarian, you know, isn't a big authority figure for the players and is a quote-unquote players coach or manager. But that does that have the same impact as when you bring in a really experienced guy who everyone they have to respect because they know the legacy, but they also are a players coach? Because that's what Buck is doing. Buck is bringing the experience to the table that people have to respect, but he's also showing up being like, I want to have fun. I want to be friends with you guys too. So he's not going to get run over. He's going to be appreciated and also respected. I think that's a lot harder for younger managers to pull off.
I think it's a lot like parenting. I mean, you want to be close with your kids and quote-unquote friends with them, but they have to know that you're the boss too. And I think that Buck has been able to pull that off. I really do. And when he was on with us a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, we suffered a tough loss, and I came in, and the clubhouse is quiet, and I said, turn on the music. Nothing happened. Nobody died. And that's a great way to do it.
And it's got to be genuine. And Buck learned it too, Michael. Buck was not always this way.
No. He's learned it through the wars.
And that's why I think it's important. You figure that out. And I think the players appreciate it. The one thing, I don't want to say players or kids, but it's kind of like what you said with the parenting, that they want to be coached. They want to be led. But they're also going to see through if you're being fugazi about it. You know, so if you're doing, like, stupid things, then players are going to roll their eyes and go, really? It's got to be natural. It's got to be organic. And I think that break Buck got was huge for him, to be able to see the game outside, see the changes, work on yes. I think it's been helpful. And I think Boone's getting there too, Michael. Now, Boone's had a better team for his tenure every year. But I bet you he's a way better manager and communicates better with his players he did today than maybe he did in 2018, 2019. Because like Peter said, he was a former player. He was a teammate with some of those guys, but he had never done it before. But now that he's had some success and he's proven that he's had the players' backs, he's really pushed all the right buttons, even handling the situation with Donaldson this weekend. He hit all the right notes, arguing with umpires and, you know, savages in the box and all that. Players love that, and it's genuine. So I think we're in a really good place with the managers in New York, for sure.
And you can't be kind of clownish. Like, I don't know if I've ever told this story on the air. So Girardi got the job here, and, like, they were in a little bit of a slump period where they weren't playing well, and he stood up in the middle of the clubhouse. He said, I need maximum effort. I need you to play hard. I want you to give everything that you have. He said, I want something like this. And there was a table in the middle of the room. And he ran around the table like 30 times at full speed. This is what I want. Like, he's breathing heavy. And, like, players go, really? I mean, you lose players like that. And then Pat Riley gets away with it. I mean, I've read stories of Pat Riley, you know, in a big game when he was the Knicks coach. He put his head in freezing cold water with ice and stayed underwater for like two minutes. And the players looked at him like he was nuts, but it was nuts that it motivated them. What Girardi did didn't motivate them. They kind of lost respect. Well, they said, well, this is kind of dumb. You got to walk the walk, but you got to do it in a way that the players respect.
And you got to read the room. Because what Pat Riley did for the Lakers worked. Maybe if he had done it with another team, it wouldn't have worked. You know, maybe Girardi running around the table was something he did with the Marlins and it worked. Well, the Yankees didn't worry. Like, so you just kind of, I love, that's why I always thought, like, you know, Bill Parcells, like the coach that he ran the ball with the Giants and threw it New England. He adapted to his players. Now, that's an X's and O's thing, but I think it also works psychologically. What can you get away with these players? What can't you get away with? You know, what he did in Baltimore and what he did in New York and Arizona and Texas might not be what works here with this particular Met team. You get to know the players, and they appreciate that. He spent time with these players during the offseason to get to know them. So you do what's right there. And in Michael, if he manages somewhere else, maybe what works with the Mets might not work with this Yankee team, you know, and vice versa.
I will tell you something about Buck. So you're right. Maybe the time away benefited him. But every GM that didn't have the cubes to hire him because they didn't want a guy smarter than them in the dugout and a guy who wasn't going to, like, do the lineup that they handed down to him, they should be ashamed of themselves that this was there for your taking for anybody. For anybody. He might not win a championship with the Mets, but tell me the Mets don't feel a little bit different with an adult in the room. And every team that had managerial openings had a chance, and they said, no, nah, I'm good. They pulled the Don. I'm good. They never even gave him a shot. The only reason the Mets gave him a shot is because Steve Cohen wants to win right now. So the best way to win right now is to bring in an adult. And that's what they did.
But there's, like, that was a pretty big moment last night with his birthday, right? I mean, that was probably a nice bonding moment. That was a fun thing. I don't know what you can put on it. Because we talk in football all the time, guys. The team that wins talks about the amputee soldier that came in and talked to the team and motivated them. Even the losing team has that moment, and it doesn't work, right? So everybody's trying to make it happen, but in certain rooms, you hit those right buttons, and that's not something that ends up on the stat sheet. It didn't end up on the box score last night because there's emotion involved. That's the thing. It's every day with baseball. You're together all the time. You got to have, you know, to like each other and want to go to war for each other. That's how you face the adversity because you're doing it together as a team.
Well, those are diamond notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. I don't know if you read this yet, Don, so tell me if you did. So Pete Alonso has 40 RBIs through 45 games.
Okay.
That's the second most in Met history. All right.
In that amount
of time. Who has the most?
Well, here's the interesting thing, Michael. For the longest time, the Mets never had anybody have over 100 RBIs. It was like Rusty Staub and Darryl Strawberry. They never really had it. So it would really either be Strawberry or Piazza. Those are, I think, would be the two.
No, you'll be shocked by who it is. I'll give you the year, and I still don't think you'll get it. 96.
Well, you know who had the big year in 96, Michael?
Benny Agbayani.
It was Lance Johnson.
Nope, not him.
Had over 200 hits that year.
Bernard Gilkey.
Yeah, well, listen, it's not a bad one.
43. He had 43 ribbies after this many games. So
not a great player by any stretch. But was in Men in Black, I believe.
What do you mean he did Men in Black?
He was in Men in Black. If you remember at the end of the movie when
– Peter, why does he know this stuff?
Well, come on, it's Don LaGreca.
Well, wait a minute. Just, you remember the scene? So they had to go to the World's Fair, and that was a spaceship, an old spaceship.
Right.
So when it flew over Shea Stadium, Bernard Gilkey was in the outfield, and the ball went off the top of his head.
Wow. That's disturbing that you know.
At least
that.
I think if memory serves, I'm sure I'll be corrected on Twitter. But why is that such a crazy thought?
Because the things in Men in Black stored up in that gray head of yours.
I'm sorry. Men in Black is a significant film.
Don, don't apologize. It is not disturbing that you know that. Everyone who's seen that movie remembers that scene. It's not weird.
And that's to say, listen, is it Academy Award winning? No, but it's a significant movie.
You mean significant in the history of the country?
Meaning that's a movie that a lot of people saw.
Gargantuan.
And it's a gargantuan movie and launched the career of our gargantuan, although very awkward in the last month, actor.
Well,
that launched
it.
Will Smith's career.
No, it didn't launch it.
From a movie standpoint?
No, Independence Day came out first. It was a year later. I just got to be factual, Don.
Okay.
But
it was definitely participated in the launching.
It was part of it. It was the solidifier. It was like you had. I think it was Independence Day came out July 97, and then 1 year later, almost to the day, was Men in Black, and it was
okay.
Now, gangbusters.
But they didn't franchise Independence Day the way they did.
Oh, I have it backwards. July 96, Independence Day, July 97th, Men in Black.
Okay.
So John Harper of SNY just tweeted out that J.D. Davis said the Mets players wanted to bring in Shakira for the little birthday bash they had for Buck. Where is that cut, Anthony?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. A lot of us tried to get Shakira in there, but it was a good day, and it was a good win for him to get 13 runs and 18 hits for him. So it was pretty cool.
He went on to say it was an idea around the clubhouse. It was probably going to be too much money. We went to Lindor and asked him, but he said he wasn't going to do it.
Oh,
you gotta love this though. This is great.
I'll tell you, winning is everything, right? I mean, it's fun to be around the ballpark, be around the team. Everybody's giddy. Everybody's excited.
Yay!
And this is something, and Michael, this is something we talk about perception again. This is something where a Met fan can have more fun with this than a Yankee fan can, because again, it's so unexpected and it doesn't happen that often that you can appreciate it. Where the Yankee fan looks at the long game, where the Mets don't have that chance because they don't win as often as the Yankees do. I could see a Met fan having a lot more fun with their team than Yankee fans having fun with theirs, because this doesn't happen that often. We can appreciate it a little bit more. I'm having a ball with this team.
Some Yankee news. Gallo and Higashioka out of the woods regarding symptoms, and they are now with the team.
Okay.
Donaldson still has symptoms, but all three players have tested negative for COVID-19.
So what's the so there obviously none of them are in the lineup today. So what,
right.
Gallo and Higashioka could be available tomorrow then,
maybe,
I guess?
Maybe, or maybe go on the trip. Also, Aroldis Chapman, according to Aaron Boone, likely heading to the IL. However, they are planning to wait one more day before making the move.
He's a mess, Michael. There's a lot. You know, that of all the things you're concerned about, that's got to be on top of the list, right?
Well, I mean, just for the length of the bullpen, because I personally think that Holmes is better at this point.
Right. Well, I guess my point is that you got to say the odds are that he's no longer going to be – he's not going to be the closer of this team. He's not gonna find it. He's not gonna turn it around. If you're gonna bet, there's somebody else closing playoff games or late season important games. I'm not ruling it out, but the odds have to be in favor of that than Chapman figuring this out.
Let's take a brief time out, take some phone calls on the Mets. Also, I've got something that Don might explode about, Peter.
Interesting.
Really?
Yeah. It's not great. I'm gonna give away one book today. Right, one book right now of the paperback version. Of Center Stage, which is out for sale today. Just be the first caller at 888-987-3776. 888-987-3776. That's not the caller line. That's the giveaway line. So we'll give one away right now, and we'll give away books throughout the day. Also, some Ranger merchandise as well. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes, and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
I wish that we could move on from this, but it continues to be a story, and we have to cover it. So okay. Tim Anderson has finally spoken. He said he didn't have an opinion either way on Josh Donaldson's punishment. He said it's true that Donaldson called him Jackie in 2019, but Anderson didn't like it then, and so there was no contact between the two while Donaldson was in Mini. Then he called him it on Saturday. Tim Anderson had been called Jackie by Donaldson in 2019. Quote, I told him, we never have to talk again. I won't speak to you. You won't speak to me if that's how you're going to refer to me. I knew he knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh, it's he was trying to get under Tim's skin.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And it's not like Tim said, by the way, I think that's racist.
Right.
He said, I don't like you calling me that.
And you're right, Michael. If baseball suspended Donaldson a game for getting under Tim Anderson's skin, that's a bad job. And if Tim is complaining because he got under his skin, that's also a bad job by Tim. That's gamesmanship. Now, if a line was crossed, that's a different story, and that's up for interpretation. But just on the surface of you know, oh, you got under my skin, I don't like you. Well, tough. But if he got under your skin in a racial way, in that kind of a way, then baseball has to address it. That's the nuance of it that makes it so frustrating, Michael, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not, you can't just call Tim Anderson a crybaby, baby. You know, you'll buck up, little camper. No, because if it was racially motivated, it needs to be addressed. But
according to Anderson, it wasn't said in 20 and 21. For some reason, he unearthed it again this year.
Well, that's why, and give credit to Peter for being on top of this from the get-go, that's why Donaldson's explanation was kind of all over the place and difficult to follow. If he had just said, listen, there was an article back, and now he was calling him that to get under his skin, it would be a different story. But it just, you know, hey, I said it to him, and he laughed. Like, guys, how many movies or TV shows or just in real-life situations have we had somebody, like, an incident take place, and come on, I've been calling you shorty for years. You never had a problem with it. And the person go, well, I did. I just, you know, I didn't say anything. Like, couldn't Tim just, maybe Donaldson thought it was no problem, but it was a problem, and maybe that smile that Donaldson supposedly saw was mistaken for a laugh, and actually what it was an awkward situation where Tim was, like, you know, gritting his teeth, not, you know, trying to stop himself from saying something. Like, clearly Donaldson misread the situation. At least,
well, that's the latest. So that was from Jesse Rogers of ESPN. So we thank him for providing that.
Yes.
And that's what Anderson said. All right.
So irritate me. You said you got something, unless you want to save it.
No. I'll do it. Don't worry. Okay. Can I manage the situation, please?
Oh, listen, I'm sorry.
I want to first talk to Ranger fans, Don.
Okay, that's important.
We've partnered with MSG Networks, home of the New York Rangers, to give our fans a chance to score signed merchandise throughout the playoffs. Be listening in the 5 p.m. hour today for your chance to score an autographed Keandre Miller jersey.
He's played well.
Callie announced that was her favorite player on Sunday.
That is a great favorite player to have. He's a really good kid and massively tall.
And it's brought to you by MSG Networks. The Rangers are in round 2, I don't know if you know this, of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm
and
familiar.
MSG Networks has you covered. Watch pre- and post-game coverage with highlights, analysis, and exclusive team access before and after every playoff game. Well, Zach Wilson, the quarterback of the Jets, appeared before the media today.
Oh, yeah.
And he's put on some weight, but good muscle weight. You know, he did it in the right way, had a dietitian, the whole deal. But he said something that, you know, both Anthony and I thought would really stoke the fire of the man who once tried to put a microphone through his forehead. So here we go, Peter.
Okay.
Here we go.
Here's Jets quarterback Zach Wilson.
It's interesting. I never watched hockey my whole life, but, you know, we got to go to that Islanders game last year, and then this year the Rangers game. Something about that playoff hockey is just a blast. And, you know, I get a lot of comments on the whole Rangers-Islanders thing. It's like, really, I'm just a fan of New York. Any New York sports teams I want to support. And so, you know, they're really a blast to go out. And, you know, being an MSG for a playoff game, you know, game 7 or whatever it was, is a blast. And so that was a ton of fun. Mets game was fun. You know, obviously want to go to a Yankees game. You know, basketball games, of course, once those get started up again.
So does he fall under the fraud fan heading that you throw at people with impunity?
No.
Really?
Because he doesn't care. He made, I mean, what did he call it like that hockey? Like, he doesn't care. He's just going to be supportive because he's not a fan. Now, if he, I don't know, let's say he grew up a Red Sox fan for whatever reason. Because where is he from?
Utah,
right?
Isn't he?
Yeah. So there's no. Let's just say he grew up a Jazz fan. Big Jazz fan. His parents were season ticket holders. Lived and died Jazz. Had a Jazz tattoo on his thigh.
Wow.
Okay. Or calf. Calf is the better way to go.
Who would ever get a team tattoo on their calf?
A moron. So. And then he comes to New York, and all of a sudden he's a diehard Knicks fan, I'd scream fraud. But it doesn't sound like he's really a fan of anything, didn't have a favorite team, so now he's in New York, and he wants them all to do well. So how can I say you're a fraud? You're not really a fan.
Interesting.
It sounded to me, Peter, like when he came to New York, he didn't even know that there was a sport hockey until he went to that Islander game last year. So how am I going to call him a fraud?
Right, the whole thing's fraudulent, so it doesn't really matter.
Right, he's just happy to just whoever's doing well because he doesn't care. He's not a fan.
It's amazing. So you'll jump on Larry David and Billy Crystal, Larry David, not Zach Wilson.
No. Because Larry David claims to be a fan of teams. He is a Jet fan. He is a Yankee fan. So then when he says, "Well, I also root for the Giants and I also root for the Mets," fraud. Same thing with Kevin James. Big Islander fan, but I don't mind if the Rangers do well. Fraud. But no, if they said, I really don't follow sports at all, but, you know, now that I'm in New York, I hope they all do well. Let them all win. Then you're not a fraud. You're not a sports guy.
And let's be honest, too. Why would Zach Wilson actually have any allegiance to teams here? He's not from here. He's only been here for 5 minutes. He could be traded next year.
No, that would be problematic.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't mean things went great.
All right, so, Peter, I have a story to tell you. I haven't even told you off the air because we brought up the guy's name, and I think, you know, we should complete the story. So the booker for the K-Rod cast reached out to Larry David to come on, and his response was very Don-like. I'm good. I believe that somewhere along the line, I have somehow upset Larry David. The last three things I've asked him to do, just a flat out no.
Well,
and it all comes, correct me if I'm wrong, all of which came on the heels of the event that you hosted for him.
Which I gave my time of.
Right.
And that was after he said no to writing the foreword to my great book.
No, that
didn't have the time.
That was before or after?
That was after, and he said, I know this sounds awful, but I would really like you to host the event at the Y, even though I turned you down to write the forward. And I said, yeah, that's cool, but I'm waiting for the next ask.
Well, Peter, do you see the issue here?
Go ahead.
Just seems like it's a relationship of favors. I mean, there's no relationship there. Did you ever pick up the phone and say, how you doing? You ever just text back, how's it going? How are things? It's always, I need this, you need that. Can you come on the air? Can you come on center stage? Can you write the forward for my book? Can you come on the K-Rod cast? And him, it's like, hey, can you do this thing for me? So it just seems like it's not really a relationship. It's just a series of returned favors.
Right. Well, no. I don't get the favors.
Well, it doesn't seem like it.
So, I mean, but we do live 3,000 miles away. It's not exactly like we can hang out and have a beer.
No, but...
You could send a text that's not about doing something, though.
I've done that.
Listen, Dan Gross is my best friend. I've seen him like 2 times during the pandemic.
Right.
You can have a relationship with somebody that doesn't have to be in the same room.
Just FaceTime him during the commercial.
You see, you're not friends with somebody unless you can pick up the phone and say, hey, what's going on? Hey, what's up? No, nothing. I haven't talked to you in a while. How you doing? And have a nice 20-minute conversation.
You know, I did that today with Breen.
Yeah, because you're friends with Breen. I don't think you're friends with Larry David. And you take offense to him saying no, where I think he's just looking at it and it's like, no, I don't want to do that.
I'm not thinking he's offending a friend.
It just, all right, then he'll say no to the next favor I ask him.
You weren't
you're using
a
each other.
You
is were what you're doing. It's a relationship of convenience.
Wow, that makes it seem very cold.
He puts it down!
Peter, are there any myths, truths I'm throwing out there? I mean, these are facts I'm throwing out. If the only time you reach out to somebody is for a favor.
Yeah.
He doesn't exactly reach out to me and say, how's the back of your belly? I mean,
right.
He doesn't say that.
That's what I'm saying. So you're not close. You're not
right,
friends. I don't know why you'd be offended by that.
But hold on.
In the past, he's reached out during games, hey, why are they doing this? I mean, like a friend would do.
Right, but.
And to defend Michael here, I must. Even if, Don, the relationship for them is completely quid pro quo, Larry's still not living up to that part of the deal. Michael's done his part. I understand that feeling of like...
I drove to Boston on my own dime to host an event for him.
Well, let me ask you this. All right, and again, this is the second straight day I'm asking you to be straight with me.
Yeah.
Do you do that because he's Larry David or because you genuinely like him as a person?
I enjoy spending time with him.
If his name was Yo-Yo Bum Chuck.
Not because he's Larry David.
But if he's Yo-Yo Bum Chuck,
I don't think he'd be having an event at the Y if he was Yo-Yo Bum Chuck.
No, I don't know that. No, then maybe he runs that Y. He's Yo-Yo Bumchuck. You came across him at a Yankee game one time. Really don't know him all that well. He's not remotely famous. And he asked you, hey, I'm running this thing at the Y in Boston. Would you come by? You would have no problem saying no. But because it's Larry David.
I mean, do I like the guy? Yeah, I would do it.
But I really think it's all because he's Larry David.
But here's the deal.
If he was David Larry, you wouldn't care.
Since we're like lifting the dress here.
Oh, yeah, it's all the way up.
This isn't a big ask. You sit in front of your computer at home for 10 minutes and talk about a baseball game, a team you love. And it was just a quick, no, I'm good.
Yeah, he was just.
And he did it when you, we asked him, what else did you ask? It was another one that he gave us, and I'm good.
I asked him to come on the show once about something. He said, no, I'm good. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, because he was promoting the show. He was promoting the last season.
You're using each other is what you're doing.
But that's okay. But we got to all play in the same game. If we're playing the game, we're playing the game.
No, and Larry clearly is losing at this game. Michael is not not returning the favor. Bad guy Larry, okay? But all I'm saying is that Michael's got to view the relationship the way it's going.
You got to be real with yourself.
You just got to be real. All right, it's Larry David. It's a really cool. You're not friends.
Remember, friends don't do that to each other. He's done some. I think the thing that worries me more than anything. I think somehow I've ticked him off without knowing what I've done.
But see, this is the issue. Your friends don't keep score.
I do.
But you're keeping score because you know that it's not a friendship, so there should be a back and forth. If you're friends, it doesn't matter if one guy's up 5-1 or 5-2 as far as, like, lunches and dinners and favors, because you're friends, it doesn't matter. But when you're keeping score because you realize you're not really friends and it should even itself out. And Larry's not holding up his end of the bargain because Larry uses you because he figures this is a platform for me to kind of promote Curbed or whatever. He's got nothing, no irons in the fire right now, so he doesn't need you. But believe me, when he needs you, he's going to come calling.
Well, okay. Does Don know who he's working with? I keep score with even my closest friends.
Yeah, well, that is Michael. Let's just be honest here.
But should you?
He is.
If you're close with some. But so you're telling me with Breen. So Breen buys, like, you buy Breen lunch.
Right.
So 2 years later, because you guys' schedules are tough.
Very tough.
You end up being in Chicago at the same time, and you go to Giordano's to have a deep dish. Are you going to expect him to pay?
Yes.
And be upset if he didn't?
I'd note it. I don't know if I would be upset, but I would note it.
But maybe it was just forgotten, Peter. And Michael reached for the wallet, and Breen was like, all right, let me get it. And Michael goes, no, I insist. Michael's going to walk away going, that's too straight for me. That you can't think that way with friends.
I do.
We have to have a sit-down, Michael, and really just tell you what friends are all about. I don't think you understand the whole
concept. I know what friends are about.
Do you?
Yeah. One more thing from Tim Anderson. He said the incident is behind him. Quote, I can definitely move on. But I'm not looking for no friendship or relationship from that behalf.
Okay. Nobody has to be friends.
Yeah, I don't think Donaldson wants to hang with you either. 1-800-919-3776. Come back, take some phone calls right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Since Max Scherzer called out the training staff and Buck Showalter in that game and said that he couldn't go anymore, the Mets are 6-1. And one of the reasons that they're 6-1, yeah, the people that have filled in pitching-wise have done a nice job, but their offense is very stout.
It's about just rolling on. And like I said it yesterday, keep swimming. Scherzer goes down that game against the Cardinals. They win that game. They win the next day of that afternoon. Take 2 out of 3 from Colorado. Now they take the first game against San Francisco, win that series, and just kind of keep moving on. And the lead's grown. So that's why you got to feel good about this team, Michael. It doesn't seem like anything really overly affects them.
The Michael K. Show.
If you're still not feeling this, then you've got nerve ending problems. You can't feel.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Such a strong statement. nerve-ending problems. Wow. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're having a good time on a Tuesday. Yankees and the Orioles tonight. Yankees try to snap a three-game losing streak, their longest streak of the year. The Mets are in San Francisco trying to continue their winning ways on this road trip. They're having a tremendous season. They now have the same amount of wins as the Yankees, a couple more losses. If the Yankees lose tonight and the Dodgers win, the Dodgers will then have the best record in baseball. Yankees still hold that distinction, having the best record in baseball. They still have a nice lead in the East, and the Mets have a great lead in the East. In fact, yeah, the team that's closest to them, I guess it's the Phillies. They're 8 games back, Don. They're closer to last place than they are to first. They're 6.5 games in front of the Nationals and 8 games behind the Mets. So the Mets are in great shape for even if they stumble through that daunting stretch that caller just told us about.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, if they are in great, great shape. And listen, even if they go about .500, which I don't think is a fait accompli, they might do better than that. But still, all those games against the Dodgers, the Padres, the Brewers, this is the best of the best. And it's a long 13-game road trip. So, you know, you're either going to finish 6-7 or 7-6. You're not going to be able to finish exactly .500. But even if it's a game under, it's all about just maintaining your lead. Forget about the best record in baseball. And it's about winning this division. And I think the Braves are still going to be the team to beat. But maybe Philadelphia kind of rights their ship. I know Alex Rodriguez a couple of K-Rods ago thought that would be the case. And certainly both those teams have the abilities to improve themselves as the season goes on with trades and all that. But you got to be thrilled with where really both these teams are. I know the Yankees are scuffling right now, but you're talking about two of the best teams in baseball. How often can we say, Michael, that the Mets and Yankees have two of the best teams in baseball?
Not very often at all in the history of the two teams together. And I don't think the Phillies are good enough to overtake the Mets.
I agree with you.
They have terrible defense.
God hates me.
You've got Harper, who's their best defender. He can't play in the outfield because of his elbow. So you're playing guys like Schwarber and Castellanos, and they're bad defenders. So you're going to try to slug your way through this? No, you can't do it.
No.
And they don't have a good enough bullpen to win. The only team in that division that scares me a little bit, and the bigger the hole they dig, the less likely it's going to be they can come back, is the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't see the Phillies doing it. And I think even Andrew, in a moment of clarity, would have to admit that. Am I right, Andrew?
Overtaking the Mets?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't given up.
No.
If I were betting on it, no, I would put money on the Mets right now. But I'm not counting the Phillies out of this
yet. History is on your side because the Nationals and the Braves have won championships recently where they didn't have great first halves and then had great second halves and went on to win. There's still a tremendous amount of baseball left to be played. So 8 games right now is nothing. You know, listen, the Phillies overcame a 7-game deficit with 17 to play back in 2007. So, listen, a bad couple of weeks and a great couple of weeks for the Braves and Phillies can change everything. But the Mets have been just very, very consistent. And it's not, and they could only get better. Because the feeling has to be, Michael, that they're getting Scherzer back. Maybe you're a little dubious about DeGrom, but there's a good possibility that we're going to come back after the All-Star break and the Mets could be in first place by half a dozen games and get DeGrom and Scherzer back.
Well, John Heyman of the Post is reporting, and DeGrom is, by the way, throwing at Citi Field right now in the outfield, but John Heyman's reporting the Mets expect him back by the end of June. So that's even before the All-Star break, which would be unbelievable. If they get back him and have him strong for the second half of the season, and then they get back Scherzer, they're going to run away with it.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I say that without any kind of doubt. They will run away with it.
This would be 86 again, where just it's not even in doubt if that happens.
If somehow they continue this pace with them both out, by the way, why would you possibly rush either one back?
Right. You take your time.
Well, then you get the time. Wait for the All-Star break if you're cruising at that point.
Because can we see the Mets this could be an interesting question, right? Can the Mets win this division without either coming back?
Yes.
Yes.
The division, yes.
I think it's possible. So really what you're looking at, guys, is would they have them ready for the postseason? Because I think that's the difference maker here. Because I don't think this team's winning a championship without those two guys. Because starting pitching is really going to matter. And to have a DeGrom in Game 1, a Scherzer in Game 2, a Bassett in Game 3 – they could take on anybody in baseball and maybe win a championship. So Peter's right. I wouldn't rush them back. as long as you get them for the second half where they're ready to go, and if you get them healthy in the postseason, guys, that's what every Met fan fantasizes about. Because tell me that's not going to be great against any team in baseball if those could be your top three pitchers going into the postseason. And Walker's no slouch either.
No, Walker's pitched well, and Bassett's been great, so.
Just you don't need five in the postseason, but if you had three really good pitchers, then you should be set.
All right, so we have the Rangers game four tonight. They try to even up this series at 2-2, so this is a massive game for them. I'm just curious, Don, after what happened at the end of game three, does Ryan Reaves take somebody out right away? Because Gallant hinted at the end of game three, kind of backed off of it when speaking to the media yesterday. Do you think there is going to be some fisticuffs in this?
I mean, there might be late in the game or something. I mean, this game's too important. You know, you don't need Ryan Reaves to go out there and get Domi in a chokehold, take a five-minute major, and cost yourself the game. This is huge. You're down 2-1. You want to hold serve. That should be your only focus. Now, late in the game, 5-2 Rangers, say, and Domi's on the ice, and you want Reaves to be out there in case something were to take place? I mean, yeah, of course, because that's what really upset Gallant, was that it happened after the game. So Reaves will be out there in key situations as the police officer like he is, because the Rangers didn't get into a ton of fights, because now you don't get into fights when Reaves is on the ice because nobody wants a piece of him. So I'm sure there's going to be situations. Domi's been playing on the fourth line at times. We'll see how they shift it around. But if Domi's on the ice for a late faceoff, the game's already in hand. Either way, Reaves will be out there to make sure that nothing happens. So there's not going to be any – it's too big of a game. And here's what I'll say about tonight. If the Rangers win tonight, there'll be a game seven. If the Rangers lose tonight, it'll be over in five.
Ooh.
That's how big I think this game is, because Carolina does not lose at home. They're perfect at home. They haven't won on the road. And they're 0-4 on the road. Why? Because they can't get the matchups they're looking for, which makes them a different team, because they're not explosive offensively. You know, they've scored four goals, not counting empty netters. The Rangers have scored three. This has been a pretty even series. So if the Rangers can hold serve, they're going to have to steal either game five or game seven to win the series. But if they lose tonight, then expect Carolina, I think, to be a really, really tough out in game five, and that would probably be it. So that's the difference. And then you like your chances in a game seven. Hey, it's one game, and that's it. Winner take all. So that's the way I see it. Win tonight, you'll have a game seven. Lose tonight, and I think it could be over on Thursday.
Very quick update. The Yankees have a updated starting lineup, which certainly sends up some red flags. So leading off now is Hicks. Batting second is Judge. Hitting third is Rizzo. Stanton, the DH, cleans up. Batting fifth, Torres. Batting sixth, Andujar in left. Batting seventh, the shortstop, IKF. Batting eighth, third baseman Marwin Gonzalez. And Jose Trevino, the catcher, will bat ninth. That means that DJ LeMahieu, who's 0 for his last nine, has been scratched out of the lineup for some reason.
So you wonder, did he test positive?
Well, nobody's tested positive yet. They just felt sick. All of these guys on the COVID IL have not tested positive. So maybe he's fallen sick. I'm not sure.
Well, you don't want to speculate. But again, as I told you yesterday, myself and a lot of people that I know that have had COVID recently had several negative tests before testing positive. So I think that's why they're erring on the side of, hey, if you got symptoms, let's just not take the negative test and have you go out with everybody. Let's make sure that you're okay.
Yankee girl on Twitter, Peter, wanted me to tell you, can you tell Peter that I absolutely love his sweatshirt? Thank you. So that's from Yankee girl.
Thank you, Yankee girl. It's actually a long sleeve tee, but I appreciate that.
Yes, no, really?
Absolutely.
I didn't notice it.
It's just
multicolored.
It's just a lot of colors. It's like orange, purple.
It's a melange.
It's the Alchemist, who's a great artist. It's his merch. By the way, guys, let's take a moment to appreciate just how horrible the NBA playoffs are right now.
Not good.
If you just want to not be entertained, I know just the activity for you. Watch one of the conference finals. Now, maybe the Celtics series will end up good because at least it's 2-all.
Right.
But do you guys recall a playoff where this many games are blowouts?
Well, I think, you know, at least in the Celtics series, it seems to go according to who's left out of the lineup.
True.
So, I mean, that tilts the balance just a little bit. In the other series on the West, Golden State's just better. They're better than Dallas. Dallas not a good team other than – I shouldn't say that. They're not a great team because they don't have great players. Luka Doncic is a great player. Brunson's a nice player. He's not a great player. They don't have a great team. Golden State has great players.
Well, our guy Jeff said Dallas was going to the finals.
He's wrong.
No, it's been a mismatch. And you're right. We may have a competitive series, but I don't know if any of these games have been really ultra-competitive. We haven't really seen a classic yet, have we?
No.
No.
You know, so, yeah, from an entertainment standpoint, it's been tough. But if you can get a Golden State-Boston final, I think that's dead sexy.
Oh, yeah. That's what you need, though.
I think Golden State-Miami would be dead sexy,
yes.
too.
Yeah, it's okay.
Not as sexy as Boston. Because this is not –
Doesn't have the star power.
Yeah, this is not the Miami of old. I mean,
Jimmy Butler's not a star?
He's a star, but I'm just saying, Michael, it's the Celtics. And they've got stars, but it's the Boston Celtics.
Who's won more championships recently?
Recently? Hold on. No. How dare you, of all people, say what you will, Don, there's no better comp in all of sports to the Yankees than the Celtics. They're right there. They are the historical franchise tied for the most championships ever. You can't say that there's not extra cachet to them being in the finals over Miami, in spite of the fact that Miami's been great for the last 20 years.
I don't know in this case if it is extra cachet. If it was the Lakers, then the Lakers-Celtics, that's cachet. The Warriors-Celtics, I just want the best matchup in terms of talent.
I think it's dead sexy. Here's why. The Warriors have been on this amazing run the last decade.
Right.
During that time, they have never had a meaningful matchup with the Celtics, who are the most storied franchise of the entire Eastern Conference. Don, true or false?
That's true.
So why would you not want the team that's dominated the Western Conference for the last decade to go up against the most dominant all-time Eastern Conference team? That's dead sexy. I win. Point. Game. Set. Match. Good night.
Yeah, Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Bill Russell.
Okay, so that's what makes it. So Yankee series are only good.
But what I'm saying
if Yogi
is the
plays,
Heat has been a better team than the Celtics over the last 20 years. So okay, you want them against the Heat?
So Tampa's been better than the Yankees for the last few years. Would you rather have them in the World Series this year?
Last few years.
So what? So
it's the Celtics, Michael.
It's the Celtics, for God's sake.
You know what? I'm gonna ask Mike Breen this. What the ESPN executives want? Do they want Celtics, Warriors, or do they want Heat Warriors?
You don't embarrass yourself.
Well, I think that every single person that covers the NBA, they want Heat.
Well, because they want to go to South Beach.
Right.
But I'm saying I think Boston would pull a bigger number than Miami would.
You don't know that.
It's the Celtics. I know that. It's the Celtics. Listen, it's not a sport that's driven by teams. It's usually driven by stars. And I would agree with you if this was the LeBron James Heat or even the Dwayne Wade Heat. But right now, I think when everybody's healthy, the stars are on the Boston Celtics, and it's the Boston Celtics. Those are one of the teams that move the needle.
Don't you dare go to bed on Bam Adebayo. Don't do it. On Tyler Hero. Don't do it.
I'm a big Hero guy, but Hero's not Tatum.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Jimmy Butler's a superstar, just like Tatum.
No,
Tatum's
I get it.
Okay,
Jimmy Butler's a superstar, but he's not LeBron James. He's not Dwayne Wade. So I mean, that's what drives Miami. But we're talking about the Boston Celtics, generation of fans.
Michael, you should really stand.
This is a tough one, Michael. Really, honestly, I love what you're doing.
No, but Don, he should stand down. Right now, it's not too late to take a knee.
How about those 27 Yankees? Nobody thought they could win.
Well, first of all, I'm not embarrassed on this take at all, take a knee. I'm not. I'm just saying that I think the Heat and Golden State is just as sexy as Boston and Golden State.
It's not. That's like that. No, it's not.
No,
they're both sexy in their own way.
The legacy of the Celtics is better than the legacy of the Heat. Right. I get it. But you can't say that the Heat are not just as good as the Celtics.
Just as good? They're right there.
Yeah,
it's just
they're
going to
go seven probably. But never mind that. I'm not even talking about who's better. I'm just saying that there are some teams in sports, even football, which seems like Prince ratings, right, and money. that there's something different when the Cowboys make a run. There's something different when the Yankees are involved. There's something different when the Canadians are involved or like an original six team. Boston's like that. There's people that normally wouldn't pay attention. Oh, the Boston Celtics. And a lot of it comes from, I hate the Celtics and I hope they get crushed. But there's people have opinions on the Celtics, good or bad, that are going to drive eyeballs. Miami's not the same as they were. They went to the finals in the bubble. Nobody cared.
I cared.
Listen, I love what he's doing. I mean, it's kind of a Kill Bill vibe to it.
I know,
agree. She did win, but it was in the script. But in real life, she'd be dead in 5 seconds.
Interesting. So you're saying that Tarantino doesn't really write true stuff?
The crazy 88 would have taken care of her quickly.
You think so?
Well, Michael, we're talking. How many people did she kill in that? Like 100 people by herself? That's the kind of odds that you're going up against with this, and I love the fact that you're fighting. And you took a few out.
But, like, if we were to go right now and open this up, yeah, you took a few with you, but if we were to even just open this up for a second, watch how fast Andrew and Anthony would agree with Don and I.
Well, ask them. They've got microphones.
Andrew, Celtics, Heat, sexier matchup.
Celtics, and it's not close.
Anthony?
Yeah, I'm going with the Celtics.
You know what? When I hear stuff like this, it convinces me.
Maybe it's time for me to go. Yeah. I agree today.
I think the take is more, not the fact that nobody agreed with you. The Jerks. Take might be it's time for you to go.
Maybe it is. But before I go, I want to give away two more books, two more Center Stage paperbacks, are on sale today. So be the first two callers at 888-987 ESPN, 888-987-3776, and come away with what Don says is a great bathroom read. I say it's a great beach read. I say it's a great read anywhere.
Listen, wherever I was, bathroom or bed, I enjoyed it. Bathroom,
it.
Bed, and in a waiting room are the only three places I read.
Waiting room at a doctor?
Yeah. What do you
do? You're able to distract yourself. I mean, you could get terrible news that you're dying, and you're still reading a book.
Well, fortunately, I haven't had any waiting room experience with life or death. But if I'm going to a doctor's appointment, what am I going to read? Highlights? I'm going to read a book in the waiting room. Peter, is that crazy a thought?
I think that's what everyone does.
I mean, anybody who doesn't have a book,
I would read things on my phone.
You don't read the magazines?
No, why would I touch filthy magazines that sick people have touched?
That was your logic pre-COVID? Was I don't want to touch magazines?
Yeah. Why would you touch magazines in the doctor's office? People are there because they're sick.
So you got
all this phlegm and sputum on your hands, and you're thumbing through like Esquire. I'm not doing it.
God, I hate recalls.
I'll swab down a chair before I sit in a doctor's office.
It's not an awful take, Don, but it does speak to his crazy.
Everything I do speaks to my crazy, Peter.
What am I going to read? Highlights? All right. So if you're at a Jiffy Lube, unless you're above getting your oil changed.
No, I get my oil changed a lot. Love to get the Jiffy Lube.
Will you read the magazines at Jiffy Lube?
No, I'll read my phone.
I bring a nice book. And if it's a nice day, I sit outside and wait.
Oh, they have outdoor waiting rooms at your doctor's. Go to Paradise?
The Jiffy Lube.
Oh.
The Jiffy Lube has got those picnic tables in the front and back of the establishment. I'll read outside.
You're sitting at a Jiffy Lube outdoor on a park bench or whatever they put out there, and you're reading a book. You look like an unbelievable nozzle.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm at a Jiffy Lube, and it's a beautiful day, like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
I got to sit inside looking at my phone, not a nozzle.
You can't.
But if I go out into the picnic table out front, beautiful day, take out my Center Stage book and read it, I'm a nozzle?
Yeah. Like, oh, look, he's too good to be sitting in the waiting room. Now, if you're just sitting outside sunning yourself, that's okay. But reading a book, Nas.
These takes, they're like machine gun bad takes.
Yeah, Little Nas X, that's who you'd be.
if you're outside reading a book?
That's a poo-poo take.
At a Jiffy Lube? Yes.
Well, but they got the picnic tables out there for people to enjoy the day.
Not to read.
what should you do?
You're not at Harvard, okay?
How reading a book makes me a nozzle.
It's very strange.
But if I was on a beach, Peter, reading a book, everything's good.
No less an authority than Shining Wizards Kevin said, Kay's doctor's office magazine take isn't the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
But that's why I asked about the Jiffy Lube, where not everybody's sick. Pre-COVID, you wouldn't pick up the Sports Illustrated at the Jiffy Lube.
Pre-COVID?
Yeah.
Oh, Jiffy Lube, there aren't sick people there. There are people that need to be lubed. That's why they're there, but they're not sick. So, yeah, I would read an SI there. But you could get everything on your smartphone now. Why would you take things that are touched by other people? I don't get it. What are you, a thrill seeker?
I never thought of it that way, but it's an interesting point.
Well, listen, post-pandemic, this is the take.
Yeah, it is the take now.
Pre-pandemic.
Does it bring me back from the Heat Celtic
take? See, that's the thing, though. The whole thing was really done just to cover up that horrifying Celtic
take. But more horrifying was that I'd be a nozzle if I went outside the Jiffy Lube and read a book. If I stared out into space, it's okay. If I counted the cars that went by, all right, that's fine.
One of my Steven doctors just texted me. Mm-hmm. We do not clean the magazine. Solid call, Michael.
No, why would you? How are you cleaning the magazines?
Well, you could spray disinfectant on them.
The nudes are back.
Can I tell you one thing, though?
What?
So a magazine's at a doctor's office. That is pretty gross post-COVID. I get it. But they got to stop. The restaurants have to stop with the scanning for a menu on your phone.
Yeah, I got that the other day. I forget where I was. It was somewhere, wherever I was on the road. Oh, Giordano's in Chicago.
They're doing the scan?
I said, you have a menu? No. I said, well, what if some old person doesn't have a smartphone? Well, we'd read them the menu. I said, you'd read them the menu rather than just give them a menu?
All you got to do is have a laminated menu. It could be a cheap piece of paper laminated that you
wipe
down.
It down.
It's not that. But I don't want to look at my phone during dinner. I just don't feel like it.
Well, why can't they're just doing have a disposable menu?
Or or disposable.
They can't print out like 200 menus.
They're doing it under the guise of health, Peter. It's cheap.
It's cheap, Michael, and it gives them the ability to change prices whenever they feel like it without noticing.
Ah, there you go.
Ah, look at you.
Because how close are we?
That's why you are who you are. I love it. Love the take. Oh, let's take a brief time out, okay? Can we do that?
Do it.
I'm still here. Not ready for me to go yet. Right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
I saw a very solid tweet from Tom Curry, who listens to the show. He said, Michael K. is either way too close with one of his Steven doctors texting him, or he's really sick and the I'm on my way out stuff is preparing us.
No, you just got to know Michael. I mean, Michael is a classic hypochondriac who spends a lot of time talking to doctors. And because Michael's famous, doctors got them on speed dial. But I will say that one of the Steven doctors that Michael hooked me up with, I text with.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's nice.
And Dr.
My
Max
Steven
April.
Doctors are great. They really are.
I don't have a Steven, I don't think.
I'll hook you up with my Steven guys. Well, we have some concerning news with the Yankees, everybody. DJ LeMahieu was scratched from the original starting lineup, and now they say he's scratched with left wrist discomfort.
Oh, okay.
Also, the Yankees just put Aroldis Chapman on the IL with tendonitis of his Achilles. And I'll tell you what, Dom, remember what I always said, why they were off to a great start? They were all healthy.
They're healthy.
Well, they're not healthy now, and this is not great. It's not a time to panic, but you can't say this is great. I'm sorry, it's just not. You've got three guys on the COVID IL tour getting better, they said. You've got Chad Green out for the year. By the way, it's his 31st birthday today. You have LaWajica not pitching well. That's not an injury. You have DJ LeMay, who's scratched because of left wrist soreness, and this is a guy who plays to a lot of pain. And then you have your closer going down with Achilles tendonitis. As they say in Mad Men, not great, Bob.
It's not great, but like you've seen with the Mets, that there are times that, you know, you gotta face up to this adversity, and you're going to have to get injuries. That's just the way it works in sports, right? You're not going to be healthy all year long, and you just got to find a way to overcome it. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. And listen, the Yankees should feel used to it. Every year they seem to suffer through a ton of injuries, but they got themselves a little bit of margin for error here. What, they got a 4.5-game lead on the Rays? I'll tell you, that's a big week coming up for the Yankees, too, with the Rays and the Angels.
Yeah. Yep. Also, Kyle Higashioka was now reinstated from the COVID-19 list. So he's back. He's back.
The Framer.
He's the Framer. Ranger fans, we've partnered with MSG Networks, home of the New York Rangers, to give our fans a chance to score signed merch throughout the NHL playoffs. Next up, we're giving away an autographed Keandre Miller jersey. All you have to do is be caller number 4 right now at 1-888-987-ESPN to win. Brought to you by MSG Networks. The Rangers are in round 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and MSG Networks has you covered. Watch pre- and post-game coverage, highlights, analysis, and exclusive team access before and after every playoff game. Our pregame show is at 6:30 today. Mm-hmm. Dom will be all over that. And the play-by-play, you can hear it right here on 98.7. And if you want to watch it on TV, it's on ESPN.
That's right.
On TV.
I'm guessing ENN tonight is a radio-only vehicle?
Ray Rowe.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Nothing like batting practice, Peter. Are you kidding me?
No, you can't miss
now that.
Now
that it's DJ'd.
You got to get to a radio. Big ENN tonight.
All right, so Don,
Ray Rowe.
I try to find things that might fire you up. So Chris Collinsworth on Pro Football Focus said he sees the Jets, I'm paraphrasing now, sees the Jets being like the Bengals and taking that real big step. And obviously people are now on board with me, Peter, because of my 10-win prediction in the always famous, never boring, win-loss, win-loss, loss-loss, win game. Don, your take on Collinsworth and Kay.
Listen, it's starting to pile up here because Mel Kiper had a similar opinion. What was it? Was it Dan Orlovsky? Similar
also
opinion.
Also doesn't like cake, by the way, Dan Orlovsky.
Well, again, there's a lot there. I think Mel Kiper said they could finish in second place, which is not necessarily a playoff team. Dan had them going to the playoffs, and now Chris Collinsworth believes that they can be this year's Cincinnati. Come on. Why are we putting so much pressure on this team? They don't have to do that. But let's just break it down. Joe Burrow had 10 starts before he got hurt in that Giant game in 2020. Completed 65.3% of his passes, just a shade under 2,700 yards, 13 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Quarterback rating of 89.8. That was a really good rookie start, right?
Yep, yep.
And there was no Chase because Chase was drafted that year, right?
Yep.
So has, again, I don't want to feel like I'm bashing the Jets, but I'm just trying to be realistic. Did Zach Wilson show you anything Joe Burrow like in his rookie year?
No, nothing.
So don't you think that has to be part of the equation when you're saying that they can have a Cincinnati-type year? That Zach Wilson's going to be able to take advantage of all of these weapons? Now, they went out and got weapons. So I get the analogy as a possible best-case scenario. Now, in his rookie year, he had 13 starts, completed 55.6% of his passes, so 10% less, 9 touchdowns, 11 interceptions with a quarterback rating Where is it? Why am I not seeing the quarterback rating? 69.7, 20 points less. So how are you saying he's going to be Joe Burrow? Who Joe Burrow might be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL on his way to being. And Zach Wilson's a guy that we're very curious whether he's going to be the step. The only thing they have in common is both entering their second year within the comparison where Burrow entered his second year and goes and wins a Super Bowl. And one was drafted first overall, the other drafted second. But have you seen Joe Burrow in Zach Wilson? Now, it doesn't mean it can't happen, Michael, but you throw these things out there, and if enough people do it, then that'll be the expectation. And I just think it's an unfair expectation.
It's a lot. I think it's all based on potential. I don't think it's based on anything that we saw. I mean, we watched every single snap the guy had. I mean, there were moments, but there were bad moments, too. So you're just saying this because of what he did in school and the fact that he was drafted second, and you're saying, okay, now the exponential jump. But did the exponential jump happen for Daniel Jones? No. It doesn't happen for every player. So yeah. I think it's aggressive. I thought my 10-win pick was aggressive.
But that's the win-loss-loss-loss-win game. I don't think you really believe they're a 10-win team.
Well, I like if you said how many games are the Jets going to win, without me doing the win-loss-loss-loss-win game, I wouldn't say 10, but it just started to pile up.
No, I mean, we have fun with it, and you could take each isolated moment, but overall, to go 10-7, to win 8 more games than the year before. Bill Parcells pulled off a miracle, going 9-7 after the 1-15 Jets, but you know that's a Hall of Fame coach, and certainly the Jets had a lot more talent. They should not have finished 1-15. I mean, it's a lot of pressure to put on a second-year head coach, a second-year offensive coordinator, a second-year quarterback, start throwing out, I could see him doing a Joe Burrow. Yeah, really? To go to a Super Bowl? Come on. Listen, and I think Jet fans are smart enough to realize those expectations are completely out of whack. But for three people that I respect to have that opinion, there's going to be there will be some people who actually believe this. And that's way too much. I mean, if this team went out and won six, seven games, Michael, and looked better than they did last year, and Zach Wilson, you know, threw for 4,000 yards and threw more touchdowns and interceptions, I think you should be thrilled. We start throwing out second place, playoff team, maybe making a Cincinnati jump. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, if they go 7-10, people are going to be disappointed. And as Don's saying, it might be unfair just because some people are putting these unbelievable expectations on them doesn't mean that that's the truth, and doesn't mean if they don't reach those expectations that they failed.
Right, exactly. They don't have to do this. If they do it, great, super. But if they don't and they end up only winning, you know, six, seven games, but it looks better, you know, and the quarterback stays healthy, how about that for a full 17 games? And his stats are there, and they lose a couple of close games. Are we going to sit there and go, we're going to put Saleh on the hot seat because he didn't live up to the expectations of going to the playoffs? You know how difficult this conference is?
Well, if they don't do well, Saleh's going to be in a hot seat. I mean, we've seen it. Second year, if you don't do well, I'm not saying you have to win or make the playoffs. You better show improvement.
Hey, if they win five games, Michael, and just look awful, of course. But even it's tough to put a numerical value on wins because, you know, how does it go? Who stays healthy? You know, but we may look at a 6-11 or 7-10 season and go, you know what? They're a better team than they were last year. They took a huge step forward. Or they might win eight games and Zach misses half of them and they luck their way into a couple of wins and we'll go, boy, that wasn't what I expected. So let's just see it first. But God, these expectations, my God.
Let's take a brief timeout. The expectations are we will be back after the timeout, and that's not promising much, but we'll be great.
Yeah.
That's
my goodness.
Right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.